Welcome to Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 108. I am Mal, and I'm joined over the internet by Mr. Stephen Hill. How are you?
How are you doing? You all right?
I'm doing good. Full transparency before we get on with this. We did actually record another whole podcast yesterday, but so much happened in the metal industry in the kind of 12 hours since then. That we just thought, fuck it, we'll do another one and go with all the other stuff that's happened as well.
We're going to release that podcast in the sort of the 20th anniversary box set.
Yeah.
Final reissue.
That'll definitely be worth the extra 30 quid.
Oh, big time.
On top of the nothing that you normally pay for our podcast.
Yeah.
Definitely worth it. But yeah, we find ourselves in a very different world from the one that we last left you in when we did a proper podcast 2 weeks ago. We did put out a kind of little bonus interview that I did with Fleur Jansen from Nightwish last week. So cheers for checking that out. And cheers for being patient while we kind of worked out the best way to keep the podcast going. Elle is off this week, hence Mr. Steve right here joining me from his lovely home in... Where actually are you again?
I'm in Overton, Hampshire.
Over in Overton, Hampshire now, where he's currently holed up, waiting out this current epidemic that we're all a part of. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I guess that's the main thing we're going to talk about today, because it's had such a devastating impact on the music industry, never more so than today, which we'll get to in a bit. In the meantime, the latest issue of Metal Hammer is still very much on sale. I know a lot of people have had questions about what's going on with Metal Hammer, what the state of the mag is. For all intents and purposes, it is very much business as usual. Obviously, there will be some knock-on effects of everything that's going on. We do expect that, and we're planning for that. But safe to say, if you have ever thought about subscribing to Metal Hammer or picking up an issue while you happen to be out doing a shop, now is very much the time. So we very much appreciate your support, as always. It's tinyurl.com/buyhammer to pick up the latest issues. Or if you want to check out a very exclusive digital subs deal we've got going on at the moment, I think it's something like £5 for the first few issues direct to your device, so you don't even need to go anywhere. That's tinyurl.com/hammersubs. So yeah, as I say, all support much appreciated, including watching this very podcast, which we are also filming for the first time. I don't know if we're going to put it up though.
I'm much happier about it being put up today now that I've actually going to put
Steve wasn't having it yesterday.
A picture on the back of the wall behind me. But yeah, because I've just moved to a new, I've moved house, so all my stuff's on the floor. And yesterday Merlin was like, let's film this and put it on the internet, when there's like fucking bin bags and old boxes of Scrabble behind me. So I wasn't that keen. This has kind of been a godsend, mate. You give me 24 hours to like sort my shit out, so it's
exactly
good.
Exactly. Yeah, thanks, download.
Yeah.
basically. No. Yeah, there's loads going on. We are filming this over the internet for the first time ever, which will be the case very much for the next few weeks. Elle will be back next week as usual. So yeah, we're just going to kind of feel all this process out as we go along, but we're here, we're making it happen. It's all going to be okay, friends. We're going to get through this. So yesterday when we recorded this originally, we kind of talked about all the stuff that the coronavirus had already had an effect on in terms of the music industry. Since then, Download is officially cancelled, which is kind of devastating for the metal industry and the rock industry. It's without a shadow of a doubt the biggest rock festival in the UK. It's kind of like the first thing we all look for in the calendar when we're looking ahead to the summer. I guess realistically, once we knew Glastonbury wasn't happening, the writing was kind of on the wall for Download, because it happens a couple of weeks before. But it still sucks to see, and I guess we all just have to look forward to it bouncing back next year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you say, it was absolutely inevitable. I think, like, as we spoke yesterday, one of the things we were saying was that Glastonbury, they basically start setting up now, so there was really no way around it. And you know, for Glastonbury to end up not happening on its 50th anniversary is, you know, with the kind of acts that they've booked, completely unprecedented and unbelievable in a lot of ways. For Download, like you say, for it happening a couple of weeks beforehand, I guess there's no way they could have guaranteed that those bands definitely would have been there. I wondered if maybe they would have dropped it down to a day you know, if they would have done it on a kind of skeletal basis, you know, maybe tried to do a like a 2-day weekend, or, you know, just a one-off 1-day thing that they used to do with Monsters of Rock. But it seems like even that is probably, well, is obviously not something that they feel is feasible. And then I guess that would lead to people going, how do we get our money back from this? And how, you know, do we get a half refund or whatever? But yeah, it feels weird to think that Download is not going to happen. It kind of takes me back to those days when I was growing up in the 90s, where, you know, for a few years we didn't have any sort of rock or metal representation in the festival market at all. You'd get maybe like a handful of bands playing the main stage at Reading, but they'd be sandwiched in between a lot of other, you know, kind of indie and dance acts. And I mean, now we're kind of, you're in a blessed position if you're growing up at the moment, going to festivals, that you've got Arctangent and Slam Dunk and 2000 Trees and Bloodstock and Download and, you know, Damnation and loads of festivals that you can go to if you're a fan of metal. And it feels like a, you know, we've got a really brilliant, thriving festival market in the UK. And for the biggest one of them to not be happening this year is, it's not just sad, it's kind of, it's worrying for, because who knows what will happen in 2021? Who knows what the knock-on effect of this is going to be? I mean, you only have to look at what happened to Sonosphere cancelling 1 year to think, you know, it's not quite as simple as, oh, they'll come back in 2021. You know, I'm now kind of genuinely worried about what might happen to Download.
I mean, I think maybe, yeah, Sonosphere is an interesting one because it did just disappear and then kind of made a big comeback 1 year and then just disappeared again. But I mean, obviously that's a slightly different climate because it had another massive festival in Download, right on its kind of, well, it wasn't on Sonosphere's land, Sonosphere was on Download's land, but you know what I mean, there was two big competing festivals there. I would like to think that there's no real danger of Download not happening next year. Yeah, I mean, I guess if nothing else, it just shows you how fragile everything is and how we really shouldn't take this stuff for granted. It feels crazy that there's a very good chance that we won't have any festivals this summer. Hopefully, something will be salvaged from the scene. Some of the later festivals due to take place in July and August maybe could still go ahead, depending on when this coronavirus thing levels out and stuff gets back to normal. I guess in Download and Glastonbury's case, they're just such big festivals, like you said, Steve. They have to start organising so early on that they just can't afford to consider, you know, kind of starting to set things up only for it all go to shit at the last minute. Mm-hmm. They have to make a decision. We saw that 2000 Trees just announced a big bulk of their lineup, and they've got, of all the bands... to kind of get confirmed for a headline set at a festival with everyone knowing full well there's a chance it won't happen. AFI headlining in the UK for the first time in over a decade is a devastating loss if that doesn't happen now.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never ever seen a lineup for a festival get announced and go, before.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. I mean, actually, like, I don't, overall, I'm not that mad keen on the 2000 Trees lineup this year. It's not the strongest, I don't think. But like you quite rightly say, AFI headlining the main stage on a Saturday night at 2000 Trees would have been absolutely fucking glorious. Yeah. Glorious. And
phenomenal.
We were trying to work out when the last time they actually headlined a show in the UK was.
Oh, I could tell you because I have already looked this up.
You've done your research today, is that what you were...
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure it was on I think it was on Crash Love, so around 2009 maybe. But it was a long freaking time ago, I can tell you that. We know, I mean, they obviously came over a couple of years back for Download, and they did the dates with Deftones, neither of which were really kind of triumphant knockout things. Yeah. They did the Crash Love tour playing Academy venues in 2010. So it's literally been 10 years since AFI have done a headline set over here, which is disgusting, but all the more reason to cross our fingers and hopes that 2000 Trees can make it. It's near the start of July. It would take place about 2 weeks after Glastonbury would have, but obviously it is a much smaller operation and would need much less time to start setting up. So they can probably afford to give us a couple of months to work out what's gonna happen there.
Do you think we'll get any kind of bill cross-pollination? Because obviously all those bands that were planning on coming over for Download or coming over for Glastonbury or whatever, they're still going to want to play a festival. Now, let's say that 2000 Trees does go ahead. I mean, I remember if people remember the Phoenix Festival in the 90s, I think it was 1998 that the Phoenix Festival announced its lineup and then it closed. And it meant that the Prodigy and New Order got put as kind of joint co-headliners on a day at Reading. And even a couple of years ago when Sonosphere in 2012, a couple of years ago, I mean, that's 8 years ago, when Sonosphere bailed in 2012, like I remember Refused were playing and they ended up playing at Download. So a lot of bands kind of just flipped over. So I'm wondering if Bloodstock might benefit from a couple of bands who were going to be playing Download going, you know.
Maybe. It totally depends on where their budget's at, doesn't it? Because all festivals will have budgets to go. I mean, in Bloodstock's case, there may now be a lot of people who are planning to go to something like Download who might now look at Bloodstock and think, okay, that looks like it's still happening. I might pick a ticket up for that. So maybe that therefore would give them the impetus to book a couple more bands. But obviously Bloodstock would have very carefully, and other festivals would have very carefully planned budgets around the kind of ticket sales they would have got anyway. So yeah, it's a hard one. It would be nice to see, but a lot of those festival bills later in the year are already kind of filled out now, so not quite sure where they would go.
Well, I mean, like I say, the Prodigy ended up doing a co-headlining day with the Beastie Boys just about a month before back in the night. So I don't know if they could grab a couple of the big ones. You know, Glastonbury's not happening. Taylor Swift for Arctangent. I don't think they've got a spare headline slot that needs filling. I don't know. It would be cool. I mean, particularly for some of the smaller bands who are due to be playing Download on that. Because that, like we said before, that fourth stage at Download looked really fucking good. And there's a lot of stuff on that bill that would look really good alongside, you know, the rest of the Bloodstock bill. So who knows? I don't know, but fingers crossed. Like if that were to happen, that would be great.
I mean, the other thing to consider is that we just don't know what's going to happen with coronavirus, and we don't know how long this is going to last. And I don't know if bands all now, if they've already booked it, it's one thing, but if a load of bands suddenly now start booking flights and stuff for July and August, you just don't know. If you've started to plan your whole travel around a European tour in June, and then you lose money through not being able to do that now, and then you kind of go to spend more money by trying to book it for a date that still might not happen. Like, there's a lot of variables in this whole situation. No one knows what the fuck's going to happen is the long and short of it.
Yeah, that's me.
And you can apply that to pretty much the whole world in any industry.
Yeah, that's me making the assumption that in 3 weeks, it will just be like, okay, let's try and go back to normal then, which is probably not really what's going to happen.
Oh yeah, I'd be stunned if we're all back at work carrying on as normal in a month. But that doesn't mean that we won't be working and we won't be rolling on in our own little ways. So yeah, lots of stuff has happened as a result of this. It's crazy to think that it's only been 2 weeks since we were in the office and kind of life was, the whole situation was starting to accelerate quite rapidly, and we could kind of see the writing on the wall at that point. But for all intents and purposes, you know, the tours weren't all cancelled, the festivals were still going ahead, and then the rate at which it has escalated is shocking. You know, some festivals have managed to rearrange. Slam Dunk is now going to take place in September, which is an amazing result if they can pull that off. If they've actually managed to shift the whole lineup along, whatever that is, 4 months, that's an amazing result for them. So yeah, we'll have to see what happens. But the kind of side part of this, I guess, Steve, is that we've seen a lot of bands kind of straight away taking some initiative and going out there and trying out new things and reaching fans in a new way. We've seen obviously Code Orange do a very widely covered empty venue gig, which was really fascinatingly shot and edited and put together in a kind of, you know, a whole new experience, really. Felt like a whole new medium in its own right. We've seen, obviously, Trivium and especially Matt Heafy kind of really utilizing things like Twitch to put on loads of stuff to fans to connect with them. We've seen bands putting out playlists every day. Ben and Prison t-shirts can now be used on Animal Crossing. Apparently, that's a thing. There's a lot of hope to be found in this, I think, in the way bands are kind of starting to utilize the internet, I guess.
Yeah.
To make
the
best of a bad situation.
Another one I want to shout out, actually, because, I mean, you mentioned a few, I think. The Code Orange thing is amazing, and that's actually getting put out as a DVD. So people are now buying that show, which is a crazy show to watch that show and for it to pan around and see this band going mental, panning around to an empty venue is so weird. And I loved watching that. I mean, the amount of energy they had on that show, you just think, like, fucking hell, when they actually get an audience in front of them, they're going to be unstoppable. But you mentioned Matt Heafy and Trivium. I mean, I tweeted about Code Orange and how forward thinking I thought the whole thing was in terms of the way they made it look. You know, like you mentioned, it looked really professional. It didn't just look like, you know, somebody filming off the sound desk with one camera. It was like a proper live DVD, which is now what it is. But yeah, Trivium have been doing that for a long time. Matt's great on Twitch. And metal bands, I think it's always been something, you know, we're quite a physical scene, like metal yeah. fans like to have the t-shirt and the vinyl, and you like to have the actual physical artifact in your hand.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite a, especially in sort of 2020, I think that's quite a unique, an unusual way for music fans to behave, to be fair. I'm not sure you get that so much in pop and EDM and hip hop and then those other genres. It doesn't really seem to be people's pressing concern in the same way as
yeah.
metal, getting the, you know, the special limited edition version of whatever. And I think that's to our credit. But in this instance, I think it means that metal bands have sort of been left behind a little bit. When you look at the way that a lot of those other acts, those more kind of modern bands from more modern genres, treat social media and treat the internet and behave, and, you know, the way in which they release their music and the way they tease their music, they tend to be a bit better at it than metal bands do. So hopefully this will be a wake-up call and we can get the sort of best of both worlds, because, you know, I'm like you, can see behind you, you've got like the Black Sabbath vinyl box set, the Injustice for All box set. Is that a Motorhead box set as well?
I should say Injustice for All is currently unopened because my record player broke a while back and I haven't replaced it yet, for shame.
Yeah.
So I am currently one of those wankers who has vinyl and not a record player, sorry.
And yeah, mate, don't open it until you want it in mint condition. That's the other thing as well.
Yeah, I want it when I play it, I want to be able to like go over it for the first time properly.
I've got that. It sounds brilliant, by the way. And I think hopefully, you know, metal bands will learn to embrace that, and, you know, we'll find a way to strike that happy medium between really, really supporting our bands. I think metal bands are pretty good at supporting bands in terms of merch and
definitely
physical. It's still the best way to support a band. Like, yeah, that is still the best.
I think we're kind of almost talking about two different things, aren't we? We're talking about how to support a band, as in directly contribute to their income, and how bands can best reach people and develop and kind yeah. of all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I think maybe because of the former being so strong in metal, they kind of, bands sometimes don't think so much about the latter. Mm. So hopefully they will start thinking about it now. I mean, to give a shout out to something that I do away from Metal Hammer, and they're not a particularly metal band, but they're a great band, the band Nervous. Do you know this band? They're like a kind of UK emo-y pop punk band. They're doing a virtual tour next week, and they're going to be playing my other podcast, Riot Act. They're going to be playing our Instagram page, like, as an action. And they're doing, I think they're doing somebody else's Facebook page. They're doing some other magazine's Twitch channel. And they're doing like 4 days on the trot. They're doing a live show live on different social media platforms, which is wicked. Like, it's
that
a really,
awesome,
really
idea.
Uniquely brilliant idea. And, you know, they came to us and proposed it, and we were just like, that's fucking excellent. Like, you know, it, and it benefits everyone. Hopefully more, they'll say nice things about us, and it will expose them to more people. And it's just a chance for people who like that band to be able to watch them actually playing live, sort of wherever. So yeah, man, there's a lot of creative stuff that's happening. And yeah, I think we don't want to forget this. Oh, there's a really cool balance to be struck, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel confident that the scene will take this stuff forward. I think, God, once we work out what the hell is going to happen next, and, you know, I don't want to take this stuff for granted. This current climate is the kind of thing we are seeing, people losing jobs all over the country, and make no bones about it, we will probably see bands breaking up because of this kind of thing, because it's causing real havoc. But I hope once we come out the other side of all that, we will, the scene will be in a kind of, in the long run, a kind of stronger and more bonded and more connected and more forward-minded state. And I really do think that would be the case. I mean, in terms of great things happening in the heavy music scene, obviously we had a new Trivium track drop today. I mean, we've heard the album, but we can now kind of talk at length about this song in particular, the title track of What the Dead Men Say.
Yeah.
What a song.
Yeah, do you know what? Like, Trivium are a band who I think have had, definitely had one of the most interesting careers in metal, kind of full stop. When you listen to their back catalogue, I don't know if you've ever sat down and listened to Embers to Inferno all the way through to, well, if you've got What the Dead Men Say, if you sit down and give yourself a kind of 8-hour period to just listen to the entire Trivium back catalogue from front to back, it goes to so many places, and not all of them are great, not all of them are perfect, but when they get it right, they get it about as right as most bands can get it right. And I mean, I have to say, Silence in the Snow was probably the one that I vibe with the least. Like, it's not really the type it's not really the type of metal that I am interested in, and I don't think they got that blend of what they were trying to do right either. But this new song is like, when I hear that, it's like, oh, that feels like what you were trying to do on that record, but you're doing it properly. It's a massive, kind of defiant, clenched fist, booming heavy.
Sounds modern as well. It sounds like something that belongs right here now.
Yeah.
Whereas Silence in the Snow was, it's not that it sounded off, it sounded like they basically taken a very old fashioned metal template and tried to kind of squeeze it through a modern Trivium kind of prism. And for me, it didn't quite work. I know it produced some very successful songs. Oh God, what's the track?
Well, the title track and
yes, the title track's big, but this is a good thing about doing this on the computer is that I can research as I'm chatting. Until the World Goes Cold is their biggest ever song on Spotify. So like, it's done some good things for them for sure. But I just don't think, I think after Shogun and In Waves, which was such just fantastic albums that really got them back into people's minds and hearts and everything. Mm. They put out Vengeance Falls, which was like fine at best. I think Strife's an absolutely great song, but the rest of it was not quite up to scratch. And then they followed that with A Silence in the Snow. And it was just like, oh, this just feels like a weird left turn rather than the dream album people were waiting for. Fast forward to The Sin and the Sentence, and it's like, oh my God, this is it. This is the Trivium we've been waiting for. This is the album we've been wanting them to make for like 10 fucking years. And now, by the sounds of these first two singles, and we can comfortably say the rest of the album, trust us, very much lives up to that, is kind of taking that core template and is actually kind of expanding it a bit and nurturing it and adding more layers, but in a way that feels modern and exciting and vibrant and fucking heavy. Yeah. So heavy.
Yeah, how much can we talk about the new album? Much?
Not much? Well, only because we'll do a few review on it at some point. Yeah. So broad strokes, we can chat about it. But
yeah, well, I would say if you like the last Trivium album, but you want something that's got, I would say, even more depth to it.
Definitely.
This new Trivium record is, I mean, it's big words in it to sort of turn around and be like, it might be their best album, but I'm not saying that. But what I will say is, I think when you get 9 albums into your career and you're releasing a record where you go, this sounds as good as anything that band have ever done, and they're a band who've done a fuckload. If you just take that album, Ascendancy through to In Waves, I mean, all four of those records, Ascendancy, Crusade, Shogun, and In Waves, all sound totally different from each other, in, at least in feel alone. They're all completely different. And I would say three of those records are fucking brilliant as well. But yeah, but to get kind of nine albums in, there's not many metal bands that get nine albums deep and you hear that album and go, this may well be the best thing they've ever done.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And we'll absolutely go in on that. I mean, but that album's out in a month, isn't it? So there's a good chance this is how we'll still be doing podcasts. So maybe kind of clock in and turn up with us on that one as well, and we'll all talk about it. But yeah, very excited about what Trivium are doing. And if you haven't heard that title track from the album, What the Dead Men Say, go out and check it out because it's huge. Also, even more so, I mean, that wasn't really a surprise because we know the album's coming. It was just kind of a pleasant thing to have happen. But Trent Reznor suddenly releasing two new Nine Inch Nail albums, that was somewhat unexpected.
Yeah. Thanks, Trent. We appreciate that.
Cheers, Trent. I mean, there's kind of a little asterisk on this because it's the latest in the ongoing kind of Ghosts series.
Yeah. So it's Ghosts 5 and 6. It's over 2.5 hours worth of music. So, you know, if you've got a lot of time on your hands, which many of us do at the moment, then you've got time to dissect these records. And I do think they're the sort of records that probably need to be listened to in their entirety. You can't pick one song out and just listen to it in isolation. I don't think you'll get anything from that at all. So it's a bit of an undertaking, and depending on how big a fan of Nine Inch Nails you are, and really, I mean, you have to be a very specific fan of a very specific part of Nine Inch Nails to even really consider this a Nine Inch Nails record. I mean, it is a Nine Inch Nails record in name, but if you played this to someone who just heard Head Like a Hole and Closer and went, what band do you think this is? I think you'd be guessing a long time before they said Nine Inch Nails.
Well, even most of their mainline studio albums, really. You know, there's plenty of this stuff going on other records, but this is, I mean, we were talking about earlier, and it sounds like they basically, which again, they have, Trent has extensive experience in exactly this, but it sounds like two soundtracks to two movies that haven't been made.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think the second one's Locusts, right? Yeah, I think of the two, I prefer that. And that one probably sounds more like Nine Inch Nails, or the work of Trent Reznor, particularly the soundtrack work of Trent Reznor. I think it's really cool. Like, he's got a lot of, you know, that kind of eerie, discordant piano that he's like fucking brilliant at. There's lots of the kind of brass and woodwind sections that he sort of started using a la Black Star by David Bowie on the last one, Bad Witch, which I think Bad Witch is great. And, you know, I like that sound. So I'm glad they've kind of kept using that kind of that sort of Lausch jazz thing that they had going on in the background a little bit. It does sound kind of, I think you said it sounds sci-fi-esque, but not in a,
yeah, a not in a kind of, if, yeah, if you say someone's done a kind of an electronic heavy album and you say it sounds sci-fi, people are probably expecting it to come out sounding like fucking
Fear Factory.
yeah or like, you know, like a synthwave album or something. But it's kind of that really minimalist dystopian. I said earlier, listening to the second record more so, I felt like I was kind of like walking around the Martian wasteland in the wake of some kind of post-apocalyptic war or something. It's just really eerie and claustrophobic and kind of slightly off kilter and just odd. It really stirs stuff in you.
Yeah, keeping the David Bowie connection to it, if it was filmically, it reminds me of Moon, which was directed by Duncan Jones, who's David Bowie's son.
Yeah.
Have you seen that film with Sam Rockwell?
I haven't. No, it's one of those that's been on my probably embarrassingly long list of highly recommended films I haven't seen.
Yeah, it's really good. So, yeah, it kind of sounds like it could be scoring that film. As for the first one, which is Together, right? That's what it's called, isn't it?
With what?
With Ghost 5.
Yeah, Ghost 5 and Ghost 6.
Yeah, but the Ghost 5 is called Together, right?
Oh, sorry. The Ghost 5 is called...
I'm sure I've got that right.
Yeah, I think you have.
Yeah, Together and Locus.
Together and Locus, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so Together, that's a little bit more difficult to wrap your head around, I think. That's very, very, very ambient. Mm. And it's got a little bit of Talk on. I mean, I'm a massive, massive, massive fan of Talk. They're like one of my absolute favourite things ever. So I quite like that sort of thing. But again, I think you couldn't pick anything out of that in isolation at all, even more so on that one, I think. It is very much a mood piece, and it's very much just sort of sonic movements and tableaus rather than actual songs. If you're looking for songs, I don't think you're going to get much out of it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not. This isn't going to be getting played in like 5 a.m. in Slime Light anytime soon. Or maybe it will. I've seen some weird shit get played in there, but I find it very unlikely. But yeah, it's an interesting one, and one that I expect will be digested and dissected. I mean, this literally got put, it's a 2.5 hour kind of instrumental like opus that Trent's put out about 3 hours ago, and we're just kind of digesting it now. So I'm sure there'll be plenty more to say on it as the weeks progress. I'm sure Elle will have something to say on it when she's back as well. Loves a bit of that, does RL. Well, so we normally do an album of the week, and I think we're kind of going to ping pong between a couple of albums this week, just because there's a few things going on and we've been away for a couple of weeks, and Steve wanted to talk about some stuff specifically, and I felt like we should talk about the new In This Moment album, for instance, because they're a big ass band, and their new album Mother is coming out on Friday. So we'll do that first, and then we'll get into something else that we're going to talk about as well. But yeah, so In This Moment, I don't know exactly how you feel about them, but for me, they're one of these bands that they feel like they've become part of the furniture in metal. Like, you see Maria pop up doing all the press junkets every so often. We always have her in Metal Hammer. She's always great value. She's a really interesting chat, really interesting person. And then the albums kind of come and go, and it's like, yeah, they're okay, and it is what it is. So I didn't really know what expectations I had of this record. But I wasn't quite expecting this, because the whole album is really like steeped in these really strong, evocative 80s vibes that are there right from the very first song. I think what I love most about this record is the production on it. It sounds big and booming. It sounds really clear, very electronic heavy in places, kind of slightly soft industrial touches, which, to be fair, In This Moment have always had that kind of thing. They always had that kind of slightly schlocky goth thing going on underneath a lot of their stuff. A lot of these songs, once again, really wrap around Maria's vocals. If you've heard In This Moment, you know what they're all about. It's kind of like husky, whispered, scratchy, sultry vocals. They still sound really strong on this. The first song I put, it's called Fly Like an Eagle, and I put that it sounds like a Genesis track in the chorus, because it kind of builds into this big, cheesy 80s crescendo that I really wasn't expecting. But I kind of dig it, I'm not going to lie. The 80s kind of touch points don't stop there by any means. They got a track on here called Legacy, which is literally just a synthwave song that has Maria singing over it. Like, it's as simple as that. It's like swarms of electronica and synthy keyboards, kind of campy and goth and 80s. The whole thing is just sounds like something that could have come off a Perturbator record. So that was really interesting. There's loads of other things on here that are quite interesting as well. Like the title track Mother is kind of like this chorusy song that's got a bit like Fly Like an Eagle in kind of that big cheesy chorus part of it, but the rest of the song almost has this kind of outlaw pop power ballad vibe, like almost like how outlaw country music has that certain thing about it. It's kind of got that in there as well, but it doesn't sound like a country song at all, so maybe don't hang on that too much. But Yeah, it's basically, yeah, outlaw pop power ballad. And Maria's voice sounds massive on it. It's a really great tune. There's a song called Born in Flames, which is super electronic-y. Sounds like something from the Tron soundtrack almost, that Daft Punk did a few years ago. So that kind of like low level, like ebbing, bleepy kind of vibe. Yeah, it's just, there's loads of that kind of stuff on here. And there is some metal stuff on there as well. God Is She is one of the tracks that stands out because it does go into that kind of chugging, like dega, 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 dega kind of riffage that they're quite well known for. But I was just fascinated by how steeped in the more kind of shiny 80s kind of not technicolor, kind of a luminous 80s feel that a lot of this album has going on about it. And it's something that they've always had there. This isn't like a whole new thing for them. But I just found it really interesting how much they've nurtured that. And given how great their live shows are, I'm really fascinated to see how these songs will translate live, because I feel like aesthetically a lot of what they do doesn't really match some of the histrionics that are going on this album. So yeah, it's an interesting one. It's out on Friday, and I would say if you haven't listened to In This Moment before, this is a really good album to get going with them, because I think it's just not quite what I was expecting from them, and it's made me slightly reevaluate how I feel about them, and I might maybe go check out more of their stuff than I was planning on.
I haven't heard it because it didn't get sent to me, which might have been a sensible thing on their PR's part, to be honest. But given how I sort of usually feel about them, I haven't not heard it, but I did listen to the four songs that are kind of available as we record on streaming services. I can't really remember anything about them particularly, I have to say, but I don't want to judge the record on the basis of four songs, because it's less than half the record, so I can't really say what the album is like. But if you're saying there's a kind of 80s vibe to it, I think that's quite a zeitgeisty thing to do, particularly in rock
music. Yeah, it is.
Which doesn't really surprise me with a band like In This Moment too.
I almost forgot to mention as well, one of the really strange things that's on this album is, I think, not including interlude tracks, it's about three songs in. They just drop a cover of We Will Rock You featuring Lizzie Hale and Taylor Momsen. And it's one of the strangest things I've ever heard. I mean, in terms of the cover itself, it's kind of cool. Like, they've tried to give it their own spin. Again, they bring in this kind of industrial, slightly schlocky goth vibe to it, which is good fun. But you can't really get around the fact that it's We Will Rock You by Queen. And it's just such an iconic and overheard song. I just found it so strange that they dropped it, not even in the middle of the album, but like near the start of the album. And it just completely, but by that point in the record, you're kind of on this journey with them, and you're kind of like, oh, I really like what they're doing with this record. I like the soundscapes of it, and I like the feel of it. And then it just suddenly snaps you out of it by just dropping a Queen cover. It's so weird. I don't understand why it's at this point in the record and it's not like a bonus track or whatever. I'm sure they've done it like many modern metal bands do. They've covered a massive song because they know that it will get them streams on Spotify and that therefore might bring more people to their band. I've got no issue with bands doing that in the modern era at all. But it's weird to drop We Will Rock You by Queen in the middle of a kind of 80s tinged kind of goth rock semi-industrial metal album.
Yeah, it kind of makes me sad that bands have to resort to covering songs like We Will Rock You. I mean, nobody needs to... What you've just... I don't feel like I need to hear that. I don't feel like anyone needs to hear that. I don't feel like that needs to be, like, really. And I know what you're saying about, oh, well, you know, they'll get streams and blah, 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 blah. But you've got to put your artistry ahead of stuff like that, haven't you? Surely I would feel ashamed to cover We Will Rock You by Queen, because I just think that would sort of go, that would be basically like going, holding your hands up and going, yeah, I have run out of ideas, sorry, yeah, I don't have any faith in music listeners.
But that's what's weird, because, you know, speaking of someone who had no real interest, who, you know, I have a lot of time for the band and a lot of time for Maria as an interviewee and everything else, like, I'm not invested in this band at all, but there's stuff on here that has made me rethink my attitude towards them and think maybe I've taken them for granted when really I should have listened to them and properly delved into what they're all about. So to then drop a not just a Queen cover, but one of the most famous rock songs of all time, like a song that massively transcends music, you know. It's just so strange. And it sounds like it would be a good song to like soundtrack a WrestleMania like highlights package or something. But it just sounds like the kind of thing that if it's like they've all got in a room and they've jammed out a really fun cover. I don't understand why it's like right in the middle of the album like this. It's a really weird placing, unless the order of the track list I got on my stream is slightly off, which might be the case.
No, it's not, because I checked it actually. When you told me to go and list this record and you told me that song was on it, I went and looked at it on Apple Music and scrolled down to the bottom, assuming it was going to be the last track. And I was like, oh, it's not on this one. And then I noticed it was like track 4.
Yeah, very, 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 very odd. But so I think that I don't begrudge them doing the cover. I think it's a very weird decision to have it in the middle of the album like that. But apart from that, I think it's an interesting record. I feel like the interesting aspects of their sounds they've nurtured out and brought out. And yes, the 80s thing is very zeitgeisty at the moment, but at the same time, I think they've done it really well and it suits them. So I'm interested to see how they work that into their sound moving forward, basically.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. I mean, I've not really heard it, so I could kind of be a sneering snob prick and slag it off. I'm trying not to do that. So let's move on.
Well, let's talk about something we both definitely like a lot. The debut album by Irist, out on Nuclear Blast, the excellent Nuclear Blast records this Friday. This is a fucking great band, isn't it?
Oh, mate, yeah, really, really good. They are from Atlanta, Georgia, like Mastodon. Although, actually, what is it? I think it's 3/5 of the band are made up of...
they got Argentina, Chile, and Brazil represented.
Yeah. So, South American heritage. Mm. And it's a really... Like when you say Brazil and you say Atlanta, you probably think of Mastodon and Sepultura in kind of metal terms. And I actually think, weirdly, that's quite a good, at least starting point for what this record is, because it's got all the big, like thick, heavy, booming, doomy, stonery stuff that Mastodon do really well. It's got that type of heaviness to it, but it's also scalpel sharp, white hot, scathingly so at some points, in the same way as Sepultura would have been on, say, like Arise or Chaos AD era Sepultura. Like really legit heavy as fuck in two completely different ways.
Definitely.
And they managed to kind of intertwine those two things together in, it's not, you know, when we were talking about Code Orange the other week, and oh my God, I've never heard this before, and it's so unique, and it's so da, 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 da. Like, you've basically heard every flavor on this record because it's metal. But I don't know, they just intertwine those things in such an unusual way that I was like, oh, I'm not really quite sure what this band are. They're just a really great metal band for anyone who likes heavy stuff.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of like if you happen to like any of these many, many flavors on here, you'll find something. Well, what I'm basically saying is if you like metal in any form, there's going to be something on this album that you're going to really like, because it's heavy, it's fast, it's urgent. Mastodon, Sepultura, definitely big reference points. And Gojira for me is the other really big one, not least because the singer Rodrigo has that real kind of same raw, throaty roar that Joe Duplantier has. Loads of extreme metal flourishes in there. The drumming from Jason Belisha is phenomenal. Just so like urgent and relentless. And like, you're just absolutely battering the shit out of that kit for like an hour straight.
He's got a kind of like modern Dave Lombardo feel to it. You know, there's a song, track 6 on the record, which I fucking love, called Insurrection. And the last sort of 45 seconds of it, it goes double time, and then it goes double time, to the point where it's nearly like brutal, like grindcore, like Brutal Truth Insect Warfare fast. It goes fucking fast. And that's come off the back of this really big, hulking, like, big business style stoner riff, and you just don't usually hear those things put together. And you kind of think, why? Do you know what I mean? Like, why has no one thought about doing this before? It seems really obvious that you would take all the kind of best bits of metal, the kind of discordant-y Morbid Angel leads, the kind of pace of thrash, the like this down-tuned kind of lumbering groove of that kind of stoner scene from, you know, about 10 years ago, like Mastodon and Baroness and Kylesa and Torch and all those bands, and just kind of block it all together and try and make good songs out of it. Like, the songs are fucking great. This is the best, I think it's the best debut of the year so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And also what I really like about it, and it's something I can't quite put my finger on, but again, it's something that Gojira always do so well, is that it's so heavy and it's so tight and it's so, not clinical, but it's like so taut and closely bound together. But there's also this real like emotional pull under it all. Like, it really drags you in and it really makes you feel something in your core. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, sometimes a lot of bands that do the kind of thing that IRS are doing, like kind of melding lots of styles and aping a lot of, you know, legendary bands. Like, sometimes it sounds really good, but I find it sounds a bit too
clinical.
Yeah, a bit too clinical. too just kind of precise and too kind of, it's about the ingredients rather than actually making something of it. And this band really feel like they've made something of it that's all of their own. And I feel myself getting very drawn into it. And I think the key word here is promising, because this album is absolutely great. But I just think there's enough in there to see that they're finding their own way as well. And when they start to kind of go further down that path and start to get even bolder and really like nudge the edges of their own sound, I think that could be really, really exciting.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there was actually a band that came out a few years ago called, do you remember that band Tooth Grinder?
Yes, I do, yeah.
And their debut album was really promising, and it was sort of this mixture of like groove metal and a bit of nu metal bounce and a bit of kind of that kind of like black and hardcore thing as well. And I was like, wow, what a really cool, interesting mix. And if they do that on the next album and they keep that shit together and write better songs, they're going to be fucking brilliant. And then what they did is just kind of, I feel like bands often will take an element away. There's a band from Italy that I love as well called Destrage, who I know you've heard me bang on about a whole bunch of times.
Yeah, I remember them.
Absolutely maniac band who meld like Jane's Addiction with tech metal, like Meshuggah with fucking Devin Townsend and System of a Down and Mr. Bungle. And this album came out, I was like, this is absolutely brilliant. It's crazy. It's got all these things all sort of jammed in together. And if they write better songs like this, they'll be fucking unstoppable. And then when the next album came out, they just kind of took away a layer and went, oh, we'll write better songs if we make it easier to digest. Mm. Whereas these guys, it's actually fairly easy to digest already. You can see all the elements, but it doesn't feel like it's wildly like, wow, where did that blast beat come from? Like, where did that riff come from? Like, everything feels like they've got a hold on it already. And I really hope for album number two that they carry on trying to, you know, stir the pot of what they're doing, just write better songs. I don't want them to take anything away, because I think everything that they do, whether it be the groovy bits or the sort of death metal-y bits or the kind of stonery bits, they're really good at all of it, and they really connect and nail all the different parts that they do. And that's not easy, man. That's really, really difficult. They just need to write, if they just write an album of better songs than this, they'll be fucking brilliant.
Yeah, definitely. Really exciting to see where they go. You know, obviously in the current climate, they're probably not going to get a lot of touring done, but once the world resumes to normal, can some big, brilliant metal bands come and take these guys out? I'm looking at you, Trivium, Gojira, Mastodon. Take this band out. They're fucking great.
Yeah.
That's Iris, Order of the Mind, out on Friday via Nuclear Blast. Out probably today, actually, when this podcast will finally go up. Get into it. It's very good. Did you want to talk about Igor? You talked about them briefly on the first run we did.
Yeah. Oh, I can do if you want. Yeah, I really like this maniac record. This is exactly what I was just talking about kind of too much stuff together. Like I like it. I mean, you're not a fan, are you, of this?
No, I'm not. For me, it cross when someone's got clucking chickens and barring sheep on an album, for me personally, that's when it's crossing into wacky territory.
Yeah, I can see that as a... Yeah, I can...
Elle loves it. Elle absolutely loves it. She is all over this guy, this band, whatever.
I think... So Igor with... That's Igor with three R's, is a French solo artist who played... I saw McDownload a few years ago. He's got the same manager as Perturbator, and I really like Perturbator. And oh, cool. I saw the manager was like, go and watch Igor, it's great. And the live show really, really, really impressed me. And I was just like, what is this weird mix of like Baroque classical music, opera, death metal, black metal, drum and bass, poker music.
See, to be fair, you're making it sound badass.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think when it gets it right, I mean, there's a song in it called Nervous Waltz, which is the second song, which has this like huge, it starts like a kind of operatic, you know, really bombastic piece of operatic classical music, and then goes into this mad blast beat with like guttural screaming over it, and then it ends with this sort of drum and bass passage, and they're all very separate from each other, but they all kind of weave into it. They all kind of, it's not like what we were saying with Iris or what we were saying a few weeks ago with Code Orange, where everything feels very concise and everything kind of complements one another. It is very definitely like, here's the black metal part, then here's the opera part, then here's the sort of dance part, and you never know what's about to happen. Like, and often it's really exciting. When he gets it right, I think it's very exciting, in fact. When it doesn't quite work, it's a bit of a mess. So I don't think this album is great. I think it's really interesting, and I'll always, always, always praise a band for being different. And this is
That's fair. That's very fair.
Definitely different. I would rather listen to this sort of not hit the bullseye all the time than I would listen to, you know, some band just kind of tread through the same old tropes of heavy metal that have been existing for the last sort of 50 years or whatever. So I like the fact that it's different, and I think it is genuinely different. Sure. But
that's fair.
Not all of it works, but I think when it does work, it's definitely, I mean, it's an hour long. It is, again, it's some undertaking, because after sort of 20 minutes of it, you just think like, fucking hell, mate, what else? Mm. What else have you got?
Yeah,
and it is hard work, but there's some really good songs in it, and there's some really good ideas on it. It's a bit of an ideas record more than a good record, I think.
That's fair. Well, if you fancy a challenge, that is out right now as well as you hear this podcast. Let's take some reader questions. facebook.com/MattHammerReaders. I should say as well, obviously, I know there's a lot of us that are stuck at home at the moment, working from home, some not able to work at the moment, and we're all looking for good stuff to do and reasons to all hang out and be more connected with each other. We're absolutely going to be doing that on the Reader Facebook page. So do, if you're not already part of the community there, do come along to facebook.com/MetalHammerReaders. We're going to be doing loads of stuff in the coming weeks, from watch-alongs to, I think we might be setting up a Mario Kart tournament soon, if all goes to plan. So yeah, we're going to be doing lots of fun shit there. So do come join in. Ross McLeod says, when have you heard a lead-off single or track and got really excited, or bought an album on the strength of one song only for the rest of the album to be utter shit? Now, I'm going to be honest. I think I can just sew this whole thing up, because as a new metal kid who came in through that generation of music, I got a lot of shit albums off the basis of one good song.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... I didn't stick around for nu metal quite as long as you, but I think I probably did too. I mean, I bought Candy Ass by New Order by New Order.
New album Candy Ass.
Yeah. I mean, that's how everyone knows Orgy from, and they covered New Order. I mean, I bought Candy Ass by Orgy off the strength of that cover of New Order's Blue Monday, and that's a pretty bad record from the new metal era.
Although I could doubt. Sorry, go on.
I don't think it's the worst one.
Probably not.
No, definitely not.
I had the Union Underground records off the back of Turn Me On, Mr. Deadman. I had the El Nino album off the back of God Save Us. I had the Drowning Pool album off the back of Bodies. I mean, that Drowning Pool album was not good. I had the Soil album of the Basis of Halo.
You know, the pinnacle of grunge, wasn't it? The Drowning Pool.
That's not my argument, Steve. That's not my argument. Yeah, I had the Soil album off the Basis of Halo, which is one of the all-time great metal one-hit wonders.
Yeah.
There's people shouting at the screen going, no, they did that cover of Wild Black Betty, but I don't
care. Yeah, they ended with that. I saw them supporting Static X and they ended with Wild Black Betty. And I was like, mate, you got one song, play your song, and fuck off. No one wants to hear.
Bless Soil.
Anything else.
Bless Soil. You. Yeah, so that was a thing. What else did I have? I'm sure I had even more than that. I think I might have had the Edema album off the basis of The Way You Like It, which is a great song. I had the Hooperstank album off the basis of Crawling in the Dark, which is a great song. The rest of the album, not so much. I'll tell you who didn't let me down. Spineshank. I got the Height of Callousness off the back of New Disease, and that's a fucking good album. Oh, and
well,
also...
is it? I mean, I was just about to say
good record.
Actually... The Strictly Diesel by Spineshank has got that cover of While My Guitar Gently Weeps by the Beatles on it. And I don't think it was a lead single, but that's one of my favourite Beatles songs. I love George Harrison, he's my favourite Beatle. And I was like, oh, a metal version of While My Guitar Gently Weeps, I'm getting that. And bad times. If you're a metal band, you should probably leave the Beatles alone, I reckon. Eleanor Rigby by Godhead.
Definitely.
Yeah. Let's not.
Definitely. Yeah. Let Ozzy just rip off John Lennon songs and leave it at that. It's fine.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best thing to do.
I just remembered another one, though, that absolutely was not a disappointment. The War of Art by American Headcharge. I got that album off the back of Just So You Know, and that's a fucking great album.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah.
Shout out to them.
Loco by Cold... I mean, I don't even think Loco is very good, but I think a lot of people bought Cold Chamber off the strength of Loco.
I've always thought Loco is not that great a tune. I will swing for Fiend, though. That is an absolute banger.
Yeah, Fiend's good. But Loco's better than anything else on that Cold Chamber record. That's a bad...
Probably. I mean, I'm one of the people, to be honest, that when Dez got Cold Chamber back together, I was a bit like, rather just see Devil Driver. Devil Driver have done at least a couple of albums that I would genuinely love, whereas Cold Chamber have not.
Cold Chamber was such a big deal for such a very tiny, minuscule amount of time. If you'd have told me when they were massive that them coming back would have been below, like, a not even properly reformed Caius at Download, which they were, I probably would have found that quite funny.
Yeah,
I would have been glad as well. Not a good band, Cold Chamber. Not a good band. I think there's a couple that I bought on single from bands who I used to like, who I now hate. Not that metal, but American Idiot by Green Day is woeful. But I like the song American Idiot.
I think that's a great album.
Well,
I do, honestly. I know that's generally accepted as the album where Green Day disappeared from our world and never came back. But I think American Idiot is a really great record.
Yeah.
I'm not going to acknowledge the point.
Yeah, unfortunately it's not, but that's fair enough. I don't think it is. The other one, by the way, I remember getting by the Red Hot Chili Peppers and being like, oh yeah, this is all right. And again, it's not aged very well. That record is diabolical.
I don't mind Can't Stop. Zephyr song is one of the worst songs ever written.
Oh, appalling. Absolutely appalling.
So awful. I remember that used to be doing the rounds on music TV, and it was one of the few at that time. Because, you know, I was like, 17 when that came out? Is that right? 2003, wasn't it?
2002.
So, yeah, I would have been about, I don't know, teenager. And I was at that age where I just liked watching music channels. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just liked everything that was on there. I just wanted to consume it all. And Zephyr's song was like, a flat no every time.
Yeah. There was a real period for those massive, massive rock bands to release one good song and then really let you down. I mean, again, One by One by the Foo Fighters.
I can't even tell you what album that's off now.
Well, All My Life is off One by One.
Oh, right, that's it. Yeah, sorry, I was thinking the song was called One by One.
All My Life's great. And then that album is bum. But then you know, we're talking about the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Green Day and Foo Fighters, which it goes without saying, those bands are, they're bad, but they're bad bands, are bad. So, you know, particularly this millennium, those bands are bad. So shouldn't really be that surprised, really.
Yeah, I guess.
And I do think for a more metal one, this might be a little bit controversial. The last Lamb of God album, Strum and Drang, Still Echoes came out. I thought, oh my God, this is absolutely fucking incredible. And I think the rest of the album is probably the weakest Lamb of God album. Still pretty good. Yeah. I think most bands would like to put that record out, but for Lamb of God standards, I think it's not really up to it. But that song is great.
I don't think many... does Strum and Drang have the song with Chino on it? Because I thought that was a really great song.
Embers.
Yeah, I love that song because the way Chino's vocals came in was so unexpected and it was so like, I like that track. But apart from, generally speaking, if I'm going to go listen to a whole Lamb of God album, that would not be the first one I reach for sure. Yeah. Scott Situmple asks, what role does religion play in metal? Probably not as much as it used to in terms of being a primary antagonist of the genre.
Yeah, I think we live in a slightly, well, I mean, certainly in the UK, we barely live in a Christian country anymore, really, do we? I don't think many people, it's not like it used to be where everybody, you just would assume that the whole family goes to church. Don't really think that's a thing anymore. I know some people definitely do, and that's fine. My mum was very religious, so I'm not cussing out anyone's religion at all if they get any sort of inspiration or enjoyment from that. But it did used to be quite a sort of quite an oppressive thing to a lot of people who questioned it. And I think particularly in the sort of 70s and 80s.
And still is, you know, and still is in certain, you know, in England and America, maybe not so much. But, you know, even in America now, you know, we should say there's these abortion bills going through that are still very strongly driven by so-called religious beliefs. And obviously that's slightly, you know, you can make a very strong argument that that's religion being kind of misused there rather than being used in the way that a lot of people would rather it was. But maybe it is still more of a present threat to people as an organized force for oppression than maybe we realize.
Yeah. And certainly in other parts of the world, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are consequences to questioning people's religious beliefs or questioning the kind of the religious state and stuff. And it's still obviously, you know, I'm not kind of downplaying it. I just think that, you know, when I was a kid and Marilyn Manson ripped up a Bible on stage, that felt like a really dangerous, controversial thing to do. I don't know that in Britain it would feel as dangerous and as controversial.
Well, no, because it's been done.
Yeah.
You know, once something's done, it's done. But yeah, also just because the dynamic isn't quite the same. But when we talked about this yesterday, you made a really interesting point about how actually a lot of metal has actually become very heavily influenced by the iconography of religion.
Yeah, I think that would be probably the main thing that really sort of sticks, or that's kind of stuck around, is that religious iconography itself is clearly very prevalent still today in all sort of aspects of our society. And metal's objection to that and kind of counterpoint to that, and the way that metal looks, its aesthetic, is very much set up as a anti-counterpoint to religious iconography. So I think without the way that, you know, if that iconography went away, metal would kind of have to look different. And I think it's cool. I think it's cool that, you know, upside down crosses and pentagrams and all those kind of things that we really associate with the lore and the look and the feel of heavy metal are basically have been created in kind of opposition to sort of religious iconography. So I think without that existing in the first place, metal would probably aesthetically look very different. And let's be honest, that would suck, because metal and the way that we make things look, it all looks really fucking cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So cheers, religion. We can all agree, thanks to that, you've been a universal force for good. Next. No, it's true though. It's absolutely true. It's a fascinating...
The Slayer logo would look different without religion, right?
the Slayer logo. Yeah.
The sort of Slayer, yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? It looked the pentagram with like all that and all the fire and stuff.
Right, that stuff. Right, yeah, I see what you mean.
All that kind of fire and brimstone hellish stuff. Slayer yeah. just got. We'll have that.
Yeah, we'll have that.
Like, Christian's going, look how bad it looks. Slayer like, nah, it looks good.
Yeah, actually, definitely. Cheers. It looks cool. It looks cool. We've kind of covered this a bit, I guess, but Jeremy Saffa asks, how do you think the coronavirus situation is going to affect the music industry world long term? Also, it would be awesome if you can list some ways fans can help out their favourite bands, magazines, yeah. venues, etc. Well, I mean, in terms of bands, if you have ever thought about buying merchandise, now is the time to do it, because if bands lose out on tours and festival bookings, it's not just getting paid for the gigs. Very often getting paid for the gigs is actually not what makes the money. It's actually the merch sales. So whether you are watching a band's gig they're putting on via streaming now, or it's a band that you know have lost out on a tour, or it's a band you just like and you haven't actually bought any merch from before, if you're able to and you can afford to spend the money, absolutely go out and buy the shit out of some merchandise, t-shirts, go to their band camps, try and buy it from as directly from the source as you can. That's really vitally important. And maybe if you have tickets for gigs that could potentially be rescheduled, don't try and get refunds on those yet. Just hold out a bit, see what happens there. In terms of magazines, obviously we really appreciate your support more now than ever. So please do pick up a Metal Hammer if you're thinking about doing it when you're out in the shops and you see one there. Go to tinyurl.com/buyhammer to buy an issue online, or go to the same address but /hammersubs to subscribe to us digitally. You don't even have to like do anything or pick up anything. In terms of venues and stuff, that's a harder one. I know some venues, I know that St. Vitus, which is a fantastic metal bar in Brooklyn, are putting on some cool podcast interviews with artists that they sometimes have play there. I think they might have something you can donate to as well, so you can go check that out. Otherwise, in terms of venues, I'd just say go and like and keep following all the relevant Facebook pages and websites of these venues, because I'm sure they'll be the first to tell you the best way to support them individually, because everyone's handling things a bit differently at the moment.
Yeah,
have I sum it up?
Yeah, you've covered it. You've given me absolutely no room to help the situation whatsoever by covering literally everything. So I appreciate that. You've just gone.
You can answer the rest of the question then. How do you think the coronavirus situation is going to affect the music world long term?
Well, I don't know how it's going to affect the world long term. I think, you know, it's absolutely unlike anything any of us could ever have really ever conceived of, I think. So it's very difficult to know how it's going to affect the world. I mean, when we all come out of this and stuff starts happening again, I mean, I think it would be very, it's a very bleak thought to think that people won't want to start going, or people won't be able to go to gigs again, or that gigs won't happen. And, you know, the live, whether it be sporting or theatre or art galleries or whatever, it seems like a unthinkable and very depressing thought that those industries just won't exist anymore. And I can't believe that they won't, to be honest. I mean,
they absolutely will. I mean, I think hopefully a weird bounce back of this is if we can all just get through this thing together for these next few months of how long it takes, come autumn, we're gonna have a fucking good time.
I think people are gonna be absolutely desperate to go out and have kind of real human contact again. And I hope more than ever people realize how that you just stop taking that kind of stuff for granted, because it's really, really easy. Like, you and I lived in the media scum London bubble for a long time, and I think both of us have had private conversations before where we've gone, I don't really feel like going out tonight, and my god, like the idea of going to see a band at the Black Heart tonight just feels like, you gave me the option to do that now, I'd be like, oh my god, yes.
I want to say this isn't for the Black Heart specifically, but I've never so badly wanted to be in a kind of dingy London venue somewhere sipping pints that are probably going to give me a brutal hangover in the morning watching some nameless band just smashing the shit out of a tiny stage. Like, I just, it's the kind of stuff that we all live for, and I'm not even going to say hopefully, that stuff will come back and it will
be okay.
And we will work this out.
Yeah.
And we're just going to have to do a lot of shit in the meantime to get through it.
And I think as well, it because of the kind of precarious nature of everything now, I mean, my own personal situation, without wanting to go too deep into my own personal situation, I've basically shaved off about over three quarters of my monthly outgoings due to my job situation by moving back to the country, because the rent I was paying in London, the outgoings I was paying, the travel, the prices of things, I just think were kind of ridiculous and unsustainable. So I hope that when we do go back to whatever life starts to look like, you know, the days of sort of £350 gig tickets and booking fees and getting charged money for printing out your own tickets and all that kind of rip-off shit that there was in the music industry, I hope that shit gets reevaluated, and I hope people go, do you know what, actually, I don't have money to spend on shit like that, which I shouldn't be spending it on. And I hope that stuff doesn't come back. And I hope people who work in venues and promoters and stuff, I hope they realize that that stuff is, you know, it is a ripoff. Like, I hope that we can have a much more easily sustainable world, basically, because I know a lot of people resent the price of gig tickets. I mean, I don't, you know, I kind of understand why it costs so much to go and see Metallica, because no one buys their records anymore. No one buys Aerosmith records in physical form anymore. That's why you're paying £300 to go and watch Bon Jovi or whatever. But there's got to be a way in the modern era for people to get to gigs if they just don't have the money. And, you know, the inflating price of gig tickets is...
And not just gig tickets. If you know, it's one thing to have to spend like £80 for a gig at a massive music venue. It's another thing to have to spend £80 and then pay £7 for a pint.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
These are the things which I'm sure there's a reasoning behind it all, but it's mind-boggling to me. But yes, hopefully we can make some progress in that sense. Mm-hmm. Mark Baker says, what has been your soundtrack to the impending apocalypse? What have you been listening to, Steve?
I've been listening to the albums that we've spoken about this week. I've also been listening to that new Trivian album. I've been listening to a lot. Obviously, I spoke about Code Orange a few weeks ago. I've still been smashing that. In Rainbows by Radiohead. I feel like I need a mixture of kind of...
Is that the one they... Was that the one they released in a bit of a weird way?
Yeah, it said pay what you want. Yeah.
Yeah, that was it. Pay what you want. Wow.
I feel like I'm kind of switching between kind of quite sort of minimalist, depressing music, kind of quite quiet, minimalistic, depressing music, and wanting to listen to something really sort of loud and uplifting as well. So flipping between those two things. I've listened to a lot of And You're a Nurse by Trailer Dead, who are probably the best alternative rock band of this millennium. Source Tags and Codes, their album from 2002 is brilliant. I listened to the proto-emo band Sensefield's Building album today, where the sun was coming up, and that was lovely. Human Target, had a self-titled album out a couple of weeks ago, which is great as well, which is members of Unsane and Cop Shoot Cop and Swans. And if you've ever thought, like, those are all bands that are quite hard work. If ever you thought, oh, I'd like to listen to, you know, Neurosis or Jesus Lizard or Throbbing Gristle or Suicide or something like that, or Swans, but it feels like that's quite an undertaking to get into those bands. That's like a kind of cool, bite-sized, more easily digestible version of those bands. It's really good. So I've been listening to that a lot. Yeah, that's about it, really. Lots of things.
That's a nice broad palette of stuff.
Thanks, mate. What about you?
No worries.
Dead Mouse, haven't you?
Yeah, I have been listening to a lot of Dead Mouse. I've got to say, when I'm working at home specifically, I do like listening to quite kind of chilled out electronic music, because it just focuses me and doesn't distract me, but kind of keeps me going. So, I mean, if you happen to be into that kind of stuff, then I highly recommend the Lane 8 and Fortet albums from this year. They're both fantastic. I will get to some metal stuff in a minute, I promise. Yeah, Fortet, great.
Yeah.
So good. or is, I think it's one guy. I love the Grimes album. If you like kind of the spirit of Poppy's eccentricity, but actually writing good tunes, that's kind of Grimes.
I think it's there with that.
No, I know you didn't, but that's okay. You don't have to.
No, I was just wondering, I was just saying that, like, you know, you told me to listen to it, and yeah, I didn't really, I struggled with that, to be honest.
I mean, it's I think of it, you know, she's kind of a weird pop star, but that album especially is basically a really cool, ambient, but really, like, deceptively heavy electronic album. Yeah, I really like it. Steve didn't so much, so I take that as you will. But more in the metal world, yeah, the albums we've been listening to this week, I've been listening to that Iris album a lot since we knew we were going to talk about it. The Kvelertak album is fantastic, the best thing they've done since the debut by a country mile. So if you, for some reason, you haven't listened to Split yet, go listen to it. The Leached album we talked about a few weeks ago is great. The Loathe album's good. Been listening to the Aussie album far more than I thought I would have, which is great. Yeah, loads of good shit. And to do the wanky journalism thing, yes, the Trivium album is coming out and it is fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Really good. Also, I would give a shout out to people might like this. I don't know if people would like this here, but anyway, there's a band called Birthmarks and they've got an album called And Then the Rain Stopped, and that's out on Friday, as in probably the day this podcast comes out. And they're a British band, I think they're from like Essex or something, and they're just a really good rock band. Like, if you just like kind of alternative rock, they're really good. That's their debut album, it's very good.
There you go,
as well.
A final recommendation from that man, Steve. That is pretty much it for this week's show. Thank you again, as I say, for your patience in what is a very testing time for everybody. I'll be back with Elle next week. And yeah, it's just a strange thing that we all find ourselves in. No one quite knows what the hell is going on. No one quite knows what's going to happen. But I do know that, you know, our scene is a strong one. It will definitely survive. We will get through this together. I think we just need to keep supporting each other, keep on supporting bands, keep on looking out for each other in times when we're all self-isolating and all the rest of it. And just keep in touch and keep moving forward. And some way through the end of this, we will be back to something approaching normality. And, you know, sooner rather than later, we will all be back in a field again, complaining about mud and watching metal bands, I'm sure.
Yeah. We've spoken a lot, haven't we?
We have. I'm having actual voice conversations with more people on a regular basis now than I was outside of my colleagues 2 weeks ago. So it's weird, isn't it? It's weird. And long may it continue. Cheers, Steve boy. Thanks for coming, mate. In.
No worries.
I'm sure, given how easy this is to all set up now, we'll be back in with each other soon. Don't need to book out any studios. We are the studio. No. So
my world is a studio. Whatever that means. Yeah, good. Mate, thanks for having me on.
Anytime.
Okay.
But probably not next week because I was back. No. Time apart from that.
Didn't work next week.
We will be back next week. As I said, I did all the plugs, but do go pick up an issue of Metal Hammer if you're thinking about it as well. We appreciate it. Stay safe, stay distant, and stay metal. Goodbye, everybody. I'm doing this at the camera. I don't know if we'll show this or not, but thanks, guys. Goodbye.
See ya.